This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Community organizers are worried Bloomington's Public Safety and Community Relations Board is too close to the police. But Board Chair Art Taylor counsels patience.
Until we have that first complaint, it's kind of conjecture as to how that process will work, and we're hopeful that it will.
Mary Cullen reports on the first year of the PSCRB. Eric Stock talks to the new Central Catholic football coach about where his job and his faith intersect, and will visit a new organic farm that's riding the local food movement. That after a GLT news update. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. McLean County is one of the most productive agricultural spots in the country. But as Epiphany and Prairie Earth Farms have shown, all that fertile soil can do a lot more than corn and soybeans. A trio of young farmers wants to turn their small acreage into something big, another player in the local food movement. I visited Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains southwest of Bloomington along Route 66. I'm walking with Katie and Jonathan Funk and Katie's fiancé, Jeff Hake, through their 9-acre organic farm.
Our orchard that we've started is back here.
There are grapevines, corn stalks, and a young orchard. Suddenly, Jeff runs off like a kid sprinting toward his presents on Christmas morning. It's one of the pumpkins he planted, finally taking shape.
I just, seeing this on the vine like that, it's like a 6-inch fruit. So exciting. So excited.
If he gets this excited about a pumpkin, it's going to be quite a sight if the trio's big plans for Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains come to fruition. Katie and Jonathan are sixth-generation Funks, the family that turned its syrup operation into a Route 66 mainstay just southwest of Bloomington Normal. They're both deep into the family business in rural Shirley. Katie is the candy and sugar maker, on top of her freelance editing job. Jonathan is a partner in the business and also farms corn and beans with his dad and cousin. Together with Jeff, a sustainable ag advocate, they want to become the next chapter in the small but mighty local food movement.
I have a long-term abiding interest in getting other people like us who are our age, who are passionate about changing the world, involved in agriculture. So getting to be that and also getting the opportunity to bring other people into the fold. That's what's exciting for me.
Heritage Fruits and Grains is a spinoff run by Katie, Jonathan, and Jeff. They started modestly in 2016 with an acre of buckwheat, then winter wheat. Not a huge surprise that one of their first products was pancake mix, perfect for all that family syrup. Here's Katie Funk.
We're operating completely separately. However, we are working very much in tandem, of course. So a lot of the things that we're growing, we know we're growing them because they'll go well with the maple syrup. And at this point, the maple syrup shop is kind of our best outlet for selling what we have. So we have the pancake mix from our wheat from last year, the wheat flour, the wheat berries, and all of that is going to go really well with the maple syrup. And the popcorn that we're growing, we know we can do like maple caramel popcorn.
The new 9-acre operation is right off Route 66. If you've ever been out to Sugar Grove Nature Center, you've driven right by it.
We were harvesting sap from in there this winter. You know, the Sugar Grove Nature Center is right down that way. The syrup shop is right over there. And we're just, like, in the middle of it, right? Like, the main intersection. It's a pretty exciting spot to be.
They're still in the experimental phase. This year, they've got table grapes on the vine, an acre of spring wheat, 2 acres of corn, a mix of flint corn and popcorn. In the orchard are currants, apple trees, cherries, pears, peaches, almond trees, and yes, pumpkins. And Jonathan, the home brewer, is proud to say they've got an acre of two-row barley, maybe for beer.
Yeah, so experimentations will be underway, yeah, for sure.
The USDA says between 2015 and 2016, the number of certified organic farms in the country increased 11%. to 14,000. U.S. farms and ranches sold $7.5 billion in certified organic commodities in 2016. That's up 23%. Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains hasn't gotten organic certification yet. One reason is it's expensive. But Jonathan, the one with traditional farming chops, says the isolated cordon-off location is perfect for their organic ambitions.
There's no chance of drift of sprays or any herbicides or fungicides.
Or pollen.
Yeah, and actually it's great for just open pollinated crops because you don't have pollen drift from other fields. Huh. It's particularly advantageous.
Katie, Jonathan, and Jeff aren't exactly new faces in the local food scene. Jeff works full-time at Prairie Earth Farm, the well-known organic vegetable farm that's a mainstay at the farmer's market. When Katie and Jonathan started kicking around the idea of starting their own thing, the Bishop family from Prairie Earth were their earliest mentors. They suggested going to the Midwest Organic Sustainable Education Service, or MOSES, conference. That's where Katie met Jeff. Now the trio has another MOSES mentor, farmer Andy Hazard from Pecatonica in northern Illinois. Katie Funkel loves the community that they've found.
The willingness of people to share information is absolutely amazing, and we have just found that just about anybody that we ask for help or advice is so willing to give that to us, and that's just the community that builds is absolutely wonderful, and that's what I've enjoyed, I think, so far the most.
For Jonathan Funk, it was Epiphany Farms that made him think that any of this was possible. He took a cooking class with them at the Garlic Press. Epiphany is now a major player in not just the local food scene, but the local restaurant scene. Several restaurants open or soon to open in Bloomington Normal and Leroy. Jeff looks up to places like Suncrest Gardens Farm in Wisconsin, a so-called pizza farm, where visitors can see the tomatoes, wheat, and other ingredients before they head into the brick oven.
To know that they've been successful doing that and that they've kind of worked out all the details, worked out all the kinks, I want that. I want something like that. So we actually talk about putting an oven in here like that. But, I mean, those kinds of operations, I wish I could remember the name of the farm now, but those kind of operations are definitely inspiring.
For now, you can buy Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains products at Green Top Grocery in Bloomington and Common Ground Grocery Co-op in Urbana, or in the Funk's Grove Syrup Shop in rural Shirley. It can also be found in the menus of several restaurants and bakeries in central Illinois. Long-term, Katie, Jonathan, and Jeff are aiming for a roadside diner of their own. Katie says they'll probably start small at first, maybe brunch on some limited weekend hours.
You know, and a lot of people are traveling on Route 66, and there's not really a good place right here to stop and eat. So down the road, it might be a few or several years, but we would really like to have some sort of roadside diner here where people who are traveling by can stop and get food that we're growing right here or from our neighbors and get a really good meal. And I'm sure the maple syrup will be a big part of that.
One thing they share with Epiphany Farms and Prairie Earth is young energy. Katie, Jonathan, and Jeff are in their 30s and 40s. Indeed, the most recent USDA agricultural census showed that organic producers tend to be younger, with 26% under age 45, compared to just 16% of all principal farm operators. Heritage Fruits and Grains isn't quite a full-time job, not yet.
At this point, we're just fitting it in as we can and doing what we can. The hope is that eventually we'll all be able to spend a lot more time focusing on this.
Still, it's a big step toward a dream come true for Jeff Hake, the one who got so excited about that pumpkin. He's got extensive experience in organic farming and education, and he studied ag education and policy at Tufts. He's long been obsessed with plants, botany, and really the whole natural world. But he found that horticulture and landscaping on their own weren't quite fulfilling enough.
Knowing always that I wanted to be not behind a desk or whatever, I need to be out here doing these things. And if I have the opportunity to also be interacting with the public and showing them what sustainable agriculture can be like at the same time as actually working with the land, that's perfect. And here we are just about to make that happen.
The farm hopes to open a roadside diner on the property in the next 5 years, crafting a classic menu that makes use of their own fruit and grain crops, plus food from other farmers across central Illinois. This is Sound Ideas.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, and in the studio to talk more about small farms producing food grown and generally consumed in central Illinois is Bill Davison. As the local food systems and small farms educator with the University of Illinois Extension, Davison works with hundreds of small organic farms in Illinois and the Midwest. Bill, thanks for stopping by Sound Ideas.
You're welcome.
When you last appeared on Sound Ideas, you talked about increased competition facing these small farms and their produce, especially as it concerned a decline in CSAs, or community-supported agriculture, where people sort of subscribe to and pick up food every week from a farm. Is now a good time to jump in, like Katie and Jonathan Funk and Jeff Hake and Heritage Fruits and Grains southwest of Bloomington?
Well, it's a good time if you're careful and thoughtful about how you approach it. But part of what we're doing is trying to help farmers grow staple crops as a local food source. So things like grains, corn, beans, wheat, other small grains, so they can create a profit center that isn't quite as labor intensive as fruits and vegetables.
What are these folks asking you, and what kind of help are you and the U of I able to provide?
Well, we get a wide range of questions, and we offer programming on a variety of topics from gardening on up through commercial production. So we get a lot of questions about the corn and soybean side of farming, and also fruits and vegetables and the specialty crops that I tend to work with.
Who succeeds and who fails typically?
Well, most fail, as in most small businesses in general. People that succeed tend to have a good business sense. That's the hardest part about farming, is running a profitable business. So actually growing food is not that difficult, especially around here. So the larger challenges center on competing in a competitive marketplace where you're trying to sell your products and capture value. But it is a difficult thing to do. There tends to be a window of 3 to 5 years where young people enter into it with great idealism and enthusiasm. And 3 to 5 years in, they either, turn the corner and start to generate profits, or they decide to pursue something else.
What do they have to be prepared for to make it a success? Mentally first.
They've got to be really determined. So you just have to persevere and deal with challenges as they come up and not accept defeat, basically. And you have to always be looking for the next opportunity, the way to differentiate yourself, the way to build relationships with buyers, and to become more efficient every year and over time in general, so that you can generate more of a profit.
When do these farmers reach out to you, or when do you contact them, and what's the conversation like?
Well, it tends to be divided between the growing season and the winter. So we get a lot of requests for information over the winter as farmers are conducting research and thinking through, what the upcoming season holds for them. So that's one class of communication. And then we host field days and tours and workshops during the growing season. So that's another time that farmers reach out, and they get to visit other farms, see what other people are doing, and try to learn in that way.
How important is it that they already have a solid base with traditional grain farming or the syrup business in this case, and why?
Well, that can be really beneficial. And so a lot of what we're seeing are people like Jonathan Funk and Katie and Jeff, where there is an existing farm family. They have a base of land that they're working with, and they have some ability to experiment, to try things at a small scale, which is what we recommend. So taking 10, 20 to 40 acres, trying new crops, seeing what works, seeing what you like to grow, and learn how to handle it, and then develop relationships that allow you to market it. If young people can do that, they can find niches in the marketplace where they make a higher margin on a crop.
Let's talk a little bit more about the farmers. You mentioned idealism as a motivation for getting in. What else are you hearing about why they got into this aspect of farming, and then what keeps them in?
Typically, it's a love of food and farming and being outside and being independent. It has a lot of benefits in those areas. the problem is, the people that tend to approach it from that perspective often don't have a business background, which is not necessarily detrimental, but they need to work with someone that does. And so that's part of what we try to do, is connect people that have the right skill sets, because ideally there's a high-functioning team of people behind every farm that addresses every skill that they need to have to compete.
So are they listening to you? Do they put that in place? And if they do, then why might they still get out?
Well, yeah, some people listen to me, some don't. It takes time. Sometimes we talk, and a year later, you know, they make a change, something happens. And so it is a gradual process. But we've made tremendous progress over the past 5 years I've been at this job. We now have a functional flour mill selling flour into Chicago, St. Louis, Indianapolis, here, other places in central Illinois. We're growing bread wheat, which they said we couldn't do when we started. But we've added a lot of diversity to the system. We're making it easier for farmers. We're getting grants at University of Illinois to breed new crops. And so it's getting better every year. And the kind of conversations we have are getting better every year, because we're breaking through some longstanding barriers and having more productive conversations.
About demographics, who are these people? Younger, older, men, women?
Well, that's pretty easy. They're older. Mostly men, more women, though, as time goes by. I recently met with a farmer in Mason County who was in his 70s. He grows popcorn, dent corn, soybeans, occasionally peas and green beans, if Del Monte asks for them. But he told me that according to USDA data, there are about 10 farmers in Mason County that are below 30, which raises the question, who's going to grow our food in the relatively near future?
How often does a restaurant or shop, in the case of heritage fruits and grains associated with a farm, how often does that happen?
Well, I think it's becoming increasingly common. You know, we have a model here with Epiphany Farms, and they are doing an amazing work in that area. Heritage Fruits and Grains has mentioned their interest in pursuing that. So it can work, and they have an established business, which I think can help them in that regard. But restaurants and farming are two difficult endeavors, so it takes people with the right skills to combine those and succeed.
Even though one creates a ready-made market for the other.
They do, but they're both based on cheap food and thin margins.
Don't try this unless you're really sharp. What leads to the demise of the ones that aren't successful?
So for the farms that start out small and try to succeed, oftentimes they are limited by marketing. So the typical scenario is you try to go to a farmer's market. Maybe you have a CSA. Maybe you're like me and you try to drive to Chicago to sell there. Those are very difficult ways to market food. You're restricting yourself to about 1% or less of the population, and it's the most intensive approach. But once you commit to that, you don't have a lot of time left over to figure out an alternative. So that tends to be one of the bigger challenges, is the lack of viable commercial scale markets, which is what I spend a lot of my time trying to develop, and which is why we're moving to staple crops for a lot of our work, and building a more cooperative, local system and building up infrastructure so it's easier for farmers. So not every farmer has to do all of the work of handling, processing, adding value to products. So we have more sharing now, more cooperative work, and we have farmers integrating crops that are a little easier to grow.
What's on the horizon, more or less of these farms?
What we're working towards over the longer term is agroforestry or agroecology-based farms that are fully diversified and integrated, which is the real solution to creating a better food system and a resilient form of agriculture. So farms like Prairie Earth, where we have livestock integrated with grains, fruits, and vegetables. We have a project called the Middle Mackinac Project, and we're working to develop this along the Mackinac River north of town here. We have grant funding. We have lots of partner organizations, so we're setting out to show that agriculture and conservation can be mutually beneficial.
Bill, thanks for your time on Sound Ideas.
You're welcome.
Bill Davison is the Local Food Systems and Small Farms Educator with the University of Illinois Extension. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
After a break, a closer look at the first year of the Bloomington Public Safety and Community Relations Board. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from the Community Cancer Center, a partnership of Advocate Bromen and OSF Healthcare, offering the latest technology and diagnostic services and cancer treatments, along with time-honored traditions in supportive care. Located at 407 East Verdon in Normal. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. A year after Bloomington's Public Safety and Community Relations Board was created, questions linger about the board's independence. GLT's Mary Cullen reports.
The Citizens Review Board hasn't received a single complaint. Residents and community organizers say they have concerns the board is too close to the police. Jen Carrillo is the director of Mission Impact at YWCA McLean County. Carrillo says heavy police involvement is counterintuitive to the role of the PSCRB.
If they perceive that it's the police who are running the show, if you will, at the PSCRB table, then we won't actually accomplish what we set out to accomplish.
Carrillo helped draft the ordinance that created the PSCRB and was one of the first to raise concerns. Board Chairman Art Taylor says a relationship between the two is necessary and that the board doesn't take up a complaint without it first being submitted through the BPD.
We would always want open communication, a continuing dialogue, so that there's no misunderstandings as to each other's roles in the complaint process. There needs to be some dialogue and some understanding and therefore a relationship with the police as well as the police with the PSCRB.
Police attend every meeting of the PSCRB. Carrillo says the board's role is to assure residents Bloomington police investigate complaints fairly, so it must operate independently from police.
As we noted that there were problems or people told us stories about a negative interaction they had, we would ask, well, did you file a complaint? And then the response was always, well, the police review their own complaints, so I don't feel particularly hopeful that that's going to come out in my favor.
PSCRB members say the lack of complaints is a good thing, not a sign of something wrong. Taylor says it means BPD is doing its job of reviewing complaints well. He says the absence of work for the board also shows how early in life the PSCRB is.
If and when we do have a complaint that's filed through the police department, we have our process that we'll work through, but until we have that first complaint, it's kind of conjecture as to how that process will work, and we're hopeful that it will.
To file a complaint with the PSCRB, residents first file with BPD. If they are unhappy with the resolution, the complaint can be escalated to the PSCRB. Bloomington Police Chief Clay Wheeler says though the board has been around for a year, they don't meet often.
Not like, you know, if I went to work for 6 months, 5 days a week, you know, that would be much more substantial. But, you know, when you're talking about a monthly meeting, that's a pretty short amount of time.
Residents can turn in complaints at the police station, to the city manager, or at a PSCRB meeting. But Carrillo says that's really fewer options than it might first appear.
They may have been people who had a negative interaction with the police and are afraid that there would be retaliation if they came forward. So to expect that those folks are going to make their way into the police department for a meeting, I don't think that's the best way to make it clear to the community that this is an independent entity.
Board members say this is the first they've heard of the concern. Taylor says there's always a possibility for change, but the BPD provides a free space for those meetings.
We're also open to being invited by any of our community partners that want to host a PSCRB meeting. We're open to any location that would provide us that space that we could hold those monthly meetings and have them open to the public, and we're happy to work with the community in that respect.
One change the PSCRB has made to show separation from the BPD is updating the webpage so Chief Wheeler is no longer the board's primary point of contact. Wheeler says Nora Dukowitz, Bloomington's communication manager, is now the contact.
They definitely want staff there to be able to answer their questions and so forth, but I definitely recognize that the liaison should not be listed as a police department.
Advocates say they hope the board will do more than address complaints. ACLU Central Illinois head Tom Cullen said recently it's time for the board to take off the training wheels. Activist and city council candidate Jen Carrillo says the ordinance empowering the PSCRB specifically mentions the board can make policy recommendations to the BPD.
And I actually think that's critical, right? Because they could sit around and wait for a complaint to come in, or they can take a proactive approach in looking at data and determining what training needs, what policy needs perhaps are falling through the cracks or not being met.
But the board says it's too early for changes. Taylor says nothing needs amending yet.
The city council recently approved our work rules, and until we have reason to make some changes, there's nothing in the works right now that that indicates that anything needs to be changed.
Before the PSCRB held its first meeting in March, Taylor says the board had to elect positions, assemble posters and brochures, and review the Open Meetings Act. Carrillo says once the board is past its training period, it will be prudent for the police to take a little bit of a step back and to let the board grow into itself.
I would hope that as that relationship becomes more robust, that it is okay for the police to not always be present and to understand that the PSCRB is working in the best interests of the community and also, you know, to better our police department.
Regardless of the growth stage of the board, Carrillo says she hopes the panel will continue to serve as a platform for the community to come together to talk about concerns.
And to see that those complaints or grievances or comments, suggestions are being taken seriously and acted upon is reassuring.
Taylor says the board has worked hard to make sure there are ways for complaints to be filed anonymously, which she hopes reassures those who are feeling apprehensive. I'm Mary Cullen.
The next monthly meeting of the PSCRB will be at 3:30 on August 8th at the police department. All meetings are open to the public.
Some news organizations are struggling. GLT is growing. Listener and business support helps pay for news coverage and new reporters needed on the team. Eric Stock, a 27-year news veteran covering Bloomington Normal.
Food waste isn't just a problem in a restaurant.
Mary Cullen, her last beat, the State House.
Says the report puts sexual harassment into a broader context.
Fact-based, financially supported by listeners, this is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Support for GLT comes from ESA, Eye Surgical Associates, with Doctors Brownstone, Crockett, Pinter, and Vise, providing innovative treatment and vision-correcting surgeries for more than 30 years. Routine vision care also available. You can see the difference at eyesurgicalassociates.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. In Bloomington Normal, summer means crickets, fireflies, sweet corn, and opera. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more.
The Midwest Institute of Opera is gearing up for the 2018 season with Pirates on the Prowl and the Love Lessons of a Romantic Poet running through August 5th. The season takes place at the Illinois State University Center for the Performing Arts and this year features Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirates of Penzance and Offenbach's Tales of Hoffman. Established in 2011, the Midwest Institute of Opera, or MIO, provides professional performing opportunities for emerging opera artists. Currently the only opera company in Central Illinois, MIO is run by John and Tracy Cook. In selecting the operas for this summer, Tracy says they decided to go with the feel of the season and stage shows that are fun.
Pirates of Penzance, everybody loves a great love story and adventure story and some comedic moments thrown in.
And so, puffy shirts, because there's pirates in it.
Yes, well, for our pirates, we're actually going with a little bit of a Jack Sparrow kind of thing with our pirates. And they're definitely going to be a silly group of people. And I think that we all can actually identify with the silliness of the pirates and also of the other characters that are involved.
Is this your first time doing Gilbert and Sullivan?
No, we've actually, a couple years ago, did Pirates of Penzance for our high school workshop, and it was really successful. And we modernized it to be set in the 60s. So, and it was hysterical. But this time we're going to keep true to the storyline with a more traditional setting, but with some modern-day twists to make it very approachable to our modern-day audiences.
So, John, why did you choose the Tales of Hoffman?
I think we proved, I can't remember when we did Carmen, it was about 4 years ago.
Yeah,
four years ago.
Yeah,
and we proved that we could do an opera all in French. It's a huge challenge for us and for our singers. We had in mind two alum, Jared Johnson from Idaho and Anthony Gulo from Pontiac, to do the four devil parts.
There's four devils in the
tale
of the
same person.
Because there's a prologue and an epilogue that are basically filled with three acts of Hoffman's fantasies about women and muses and the bad guy sitting on his shoulder to say, this isn't going to work, dude. You ain't going to make it. You know, we thought of Anthony and Jerry because they're both awesome singers. And then we were challenged a little bit with who to ask Hoffman to play Hoffman. And Hoffman is a pretty much kind of heavier dramatic tenor role. Mm-hmm. It's throughout the whole piece. And
so it's very demanding.
Yeah,
vocally is. For the Hoffman.
So what happened was we thought, well, maybe some people will come audition for it. Well, as it turned out, there weren't any young people that really
were ready to approach
to
the
sing
repertoire.
Hoffman.
Right.
So my best friend, Todd Koalas, who's a tenor up in Chicago.
And it was a great voice.
Great voice. And I've
Amazing.
Known him for over 30 years.
He was our Radames in Aida when we did it mm-hmm. here.
So
just
we
a
asked,
stunning voice.
We asked Todd, I said, Todd, are you interested in doing Hoffman? He said, yeah. Sure, he's done it professionally in English, not in French. So he said, I'll just have to relearn it in French. And you know, it'll be kind of neat because he's a mature singer. That didn't mean old.
He's a mature singer. Like a
and
fine wine.
For our younger people to come see him, you know, work and sing and everything, I think it's a really good learning lesson for them.
Well, the younger artists that we have employed, because we auditioned throughout the whole country, and we have actually people coming from Canada to do the program this mm-hmm. year. We've had people apply to our program from Italy, Bulgaria, all over. We get a really great roster of singers. And these young singers can learn so much from Todd, because he's already had a really great career and also has a great established technique. So the program is just not about providing this amazing opera program, but also bringing the education element to the community.
So I understand you have some summer master classes that you'll be offering.
Yes, and they're open to the public. Our one is a professor from U of I, Yvonne Gonzalez, who we've had before, Metropolitan Opera singer, stellar voice, great human being, amazing singer. And she just brings so much seasoned teaching to her master classes. The people that will be singing for her will be predominantly the female voices. And then we are bringing in
ISU alum Tom Studebaker, who's a Heldon tenor. He's
a what tenor?
Heldon tenor.
What does that mean?
Well, heroic. It means a heroic.
Big
is
voice.
An, is it an heroic or a heroic? I don't know. Heroic tenor, which is a heavier tenor. He's that voice type is sort of a higher baritone, but with a lot of punch in his voice, mainly for Wagnerian roles and some of the heavier German and French roles. He's a great singer, great guy. So bringing him in to do.
And he's also a
distinguished
alum. This
ISU.
Past year, mm-hmm. ISU recognized him, mm-hmm. and he gave an amazing concert, and that's how we got to meet him. Mm-hmm. And we're just really excited to have his talent as part of our program this year.
So anybody in the community could sign up for this?
They could come to see it and then learn by watching, because you actually learn more by watching when you're a singer, because then you can really internalize what's going on stage.
So I understand you have three casts for the Pirates of Penzance. Why mm-hmm. is that?
Well, we have three casts because we want to give opportunity to as many singers as possible, and also to give the community different types of voices in each role with different types of experiences. So for Pirates of Penzance, we have three casts, and for Hoffman, we have three casts as well. And the three casts in Pirates also include our MEO Opportunities cast.
Now, what is MEO Opportunities?
MEO Opportunities is our educational program. We invite children, senior citizens, people with disabilities or special needs, and also families who can't normally afford to come to an opera to come to one of our performances as a matinee. And the opera lady comes, which is myself. And I introduce the opera, and then I do a educational presentation. It's about 5-10 minutes, and then they get to watch the whole show for free. So then they get to really experience what it is, and then they can take that information, take it out into the community, and spread the word that opera is cool. It's huge. It's our biggest concert. It's basically standing room only. That is one of the few concerts at ISU where we actually fill the whole concert hall. So if people want a ticket, all they need to do is go to our website and contact us to reserve. You can only get a ticket if you reserve.
And don't wait to the last minute on that.
No, not at all. Right. Not at all.
Okay. You're also doing some songs at the University Galleries, operas and songs at the gallery on July 27th and 28th and August 1st. Tell me about that.
It's a recital that are presented by our artists, and they get to choose repertoire they want to sing from Broadway, classical Broadway, opera, and art song. And it's a way for our artists to show more variety and more opportunities to sing, and also for us to provide lunchtime concerts for people who can't attend our shows so they can get that element as well. Many of our singers who are understudies, who are covering the shows, will be singing selections from the operas that we're presenting.
And this is mm-hmm. free. These, yes. this
totally free. Yes. I mean, it's a no-brainer, guys. Get to the Midwest Institute of Opera. www.midwestinstituteofopera.squarespace.com. And just enjoy the music.
Did I say two words in that whole thing?
No! You were great. No, because I have joy in my voice. Joy, you're like, whatever. So that's what we're doing, those concerts. So that's really exciting. So it's a way for the community, again, to get a free opportunity to hear this music. As always, the Midwest Institute of Opera is always looking for sponsors and homestays. If you can't financially open up your pockets to the opera company, but you have an extra guest room or bathroom and you love to be surrounded by artistic people, this is an awesome opportunity to do that. Again,
that's just like with the baseball players at the Corn Belters. They're hosted. They have a host family. And I think mm-hmm. the football players, you know, the indoor football team, they do that too. That is so interesting.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. And then that's a way for you to know an artist. Many of our artists go on and have careers. Remember, when you give to an organization, especially a nonprofit, it's not just about the money, it's about service and time.
That's Tracy and John Cook from the Midwest Institute of Opera. I'm Laura Kennedy.
The Tales of Hoffman will be sung in French with English supertitles. The Pirates of Penzance will be in English, and titles will also be provided. You're listening to the Doll Scene from Tales of Hoffman. What to do when words won't describe the current political landscape in the United States? At least words that can't be used in the radio. Bloomington multi-instrumentalist and activist Stephen Robinson improvised a nearly 32-minute instrumental piece to express those feelings. Robinson records and performs as Yay Big. He tells GLT's John Norton about How Long, O Bleep, a commentary on monotony, beauty, divisiveness, meaning, fragmentation, chaos, joy, suffering, the death rattling of empire. In short, it's a record about the United States.
Yeah.
That's a lot of words to convey.
Yeah.
Without using words.
You know the old classical tone poem model where you'd have these classical composers that would, for example, you know, they would go on vacation somewhere and they would orchestrate this piece that was supposed to be about their vacation. You know, this first movement is about the scene at the ocean, and the second movement is about the scene at the park where they had a picnic.
Okay.
And the music is supposed to convey those images. This music is supposed to represent those things, you know, the way currently I am feeling about what's going on in the United States.
Well, let's start at the beginning, okay? This sounds like the beauty part. To me, it sounds like a sunrise.
That's nice. There's a lot of beautiful things happening all around us all the time. So I have to always keep that in mind. My son, he's actually sitting right here next to us. It's beautiful, you know, raising a kid, hanging out with a kid, with your partner. So when I'm critiquing the United States and what's going on in the United States, and I'm often I'm a very doom and gloom person a lot of the time. I'm not very optimistic about...
As jovial as you are, you're sort of a pessimist.
Yeah, sort of is putting it mildly, I think. I'm very idealistic, but extremely pessimistic.
Okay, well, talk about the beauty. Can you talk about the beauty itself?
So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's beautiful stuff happening all the time, and I have to remember that when I'm all doom and gloom. And so in the music itself, I'm hoping that some of it comes across as being quite beautiful and meaningful and emotive.
So the last one you did, which you were on the air last year talking about, The Wind That Blows As Mountains Flow, it was spoken word, unlike this one. You described that as a meditation on the Buddhist notion of emptiness and the necessity for radical social movements, past and present. For our listeners who didn't hear the first one, let me play just a little bit. Let me play the very beginning of the spoken word part.
Okay.
Like a Avalokiteshvara with a Molotov in a cup. Hear the cries of the world, then blow it up. Stone fresh, but this stone don't know death. Y'all act like you ain't heard the news yet.
I said a lot of things on the last record using words. And I just felt like I'm at a loss for the words to convey how I feel right now. The description that I put on my website, I don't even know if that really puts across what I want to get across.
Well, take another stab at it then.
I just don't. The whole thing is that it's kind of ineffable. I mean, the feeling that I think I share with many people right now about the state of things in the United States, what's going on with our internal conflicts, what we are doing to one another, the amounts of just oppressive violence that are being inflicted upon people at home and abroad to maintain certain levels of privilege amongst a certain class of people at the expense of everybody else, while we put on this facade that everybody is free and everybody is, you know, we're all united. And I mean, you know, obviously that's not true. And things are getting worse. Fascism is on the rise. We have a fascist sympathizing president right now. Things are in a state right now, politically and economically, that, you know, I've only been alive since the beginning of the 1980s. I'm not that old. But since 1982, I don't remember a time when things have been this insane, where we have had this amount of insane people running us in insane directions. And I don't know how to express that with poetry or lyrics, other than just yelling obscenities.
So, just what you threw in the title a little bit.
Right, right. So the title of the record is a reference to a psalm from the Bible, you know. I think it's Psalm 13. Biblical scholars could correct me if I'm wrong, where there is a line in there in some translations where it starts, "How long, O Lord?" You know, and it's kind of this question, like, okay, how long are you going to allow these things to continue to be perpetrated upon us? And so for me, it's like, how long, oh bleep, you know, how long is this going to continue?
Stephen Robinson is the voice you're hearing. Ye Big is his stage name, and his new album is called How Long? Oh, bleep, on GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. Let's talk about the musical part of that. In even in the beginning, and the what I call the beauty part, there's some glitches in there.
Right.
There are musical glitches, and then they got glitchier a little bit later even. What are you conveying with that? Is that there is chaos, that there is, you know, fragmentation?
Absolutely.
Even in the beauty? Even
absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I can't even appreciate, for example, I can't even, taking my son to soccer practice is beautiful. But then when I get there, I notice, wait a minute, every kid out on the field right now is white. Why is that? Where are the fields located? Who has the privilege and the resources to be able to take time out of their day on a weekday to take their kid to this very lovely event, this very nice soccer practice? The same is true of, we had him enrolled in a hockey class. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Why is it these things are available and readily accessible to people like my son, who have immense amounts of privilege? I don't make that much money, but we have some free time. We have a little bit of expendable money, and we do things with him that he enjoys. And so it's hard for me to even enjoy that, you know, just sit there and enjoy it. I'm thinking about the political and economic reasons for why it's only white kids on the field in a very diverse community.
Well, you're a very caring, sensitive guy.
And often depressed.
But he laughs a lot.
Yeah, well, it's a defense mechanism, I think.
So how does this help you stay sane by recording as Ye Big and this new one, How Long, Oh Bleep?
Let me put it like this. I just finished reading a book by Terry Eagleton. He's a pretty well-known British, Irish, I guess. He lives in Britain, but he's Irish. Irish Catholic Marxist. And he wrote this book called Why Marx is Right. It's a great book. The thing he says in the dispelling of the myth is that, you know, Marxists don't want to be Marxists. You know, we have a Marxist analysis of political economy, and we are involved in the activism that we're involved with because we care about the world and we care about people. I would much rather live in a world where I didn't have to be a part of an activist community. I would like for that to be unnecessary. What I really want to do with all my time is make music. I love making music. That's what I want to do. Teaching is fine. You know, it's a good job. I love working with students. I think it's important. But I don't teach and I don't participate in activism because that's what I want to do with all my time. I do that because I think it's important.
Okay.
Music, on the other hand, I just want to do. It's like breathing. And this record was kind of like, you know, me. It's just me breathing. I had to get it. I described it to Ryan after we finished it. I just said, well, I'm glad I got that off my chest. It's been building up in me for years, this record, I think. And I finally had the time and the and Ryan's help to do it. And so it just comes out. And it comes out the way it comes out because of the state my mind's in right now and the political economy that I'm in right now. That's why it sounds the way it sounds, I think.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I mentioned either off the air or earlier in this piece, I can't remember which now, that the last maybe 10 plus minutes of this thing is, to me, is like Lou Reed's. You know, you familiar with Lou Reed's?
I am, but I don't. It's not
Metal Music Machine album.
That's what you meant by
That's what I meant by that.
I thought you meant like heavy metal.
No. I mean, that was he put out that thing, and was it the early 80s? That was kind of a middle finger to the music industry, or that's what. So anyway, it was nothing but noise, no rhythm, no melody, no nothing. It was noise. This is kind of has that same kind of feel to it. Where is this where the suffering and the death rattling of the empire comes in?
Yeah, it gets very distorted.
It's intense.
Much more intense.
Very industrial.
Yeah, much more fragmented, industrial. Some of the sounds that I use are intentionally abrasive, not to a point where I think it hurts. I don't think it hurts to listen to. But it's definitely annoying, some of the sounds that I use. There's this high-pitched, I don't know how to explain it, computer-processed sound that repeats at a couple times over and over again on a regular pattern. It's not really in sync with much of what else is going on. It's just repeating. And that's like the news right now. It's this obnoxious repetition of insanity every day. I don't even want to look at the news anymore. It's like, what did they do now? And every time I hear the voices of the, you know, these people who are committing egregious amounts of suffering upon people on the radio, on your show sometimes, and not your fault, you're doing your job, but I hear them being interviewed. And it's like, today on NPR, we're going to hear from Donald Trump and his visit to Britain. It's like, why are we giving this buffoon airtime? I understand he's the president of the United States. He's also a monster in a lot of ways. And I don't want to hear him every day. And this is the way I feel. And this is this repetitive, obnoxious noise that is at the end of the record that just goes over and over and over and over.
Who are you looking to when you do this kind of music? Do you have an inspiration?
Oh,
musical inspirations?
Absolutely. This record there is nothing original about this record. The biggest inspiration for this record is probably Jim O'Rourke. He's from the Chicago area. He was a pretty well-known experimental guitarist, composer in Chicago, in a couple of different bands. He famously mixed what I think is Wilco's best record, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. But Jim O'Rourke's solo records are some of my biggest inspirations for my musical taste and what I want to do with music. He's done everything from just unlistenable, you know, guitar improvisations to the most beautiful computer music I could fathom to wonderful improvised acoustic guitar records. He's an amazing composer and musician and super inspirational to me because he defies genre and he produces and puts out tons of different stuff. It's hard to categorize him. And to me, that's an inspiration.
Bloomington's Stephen Robinson, a.k.a. Ye Big, speaking with GLT's John Norton about his new album, How Long, Oh Bleep. He's planning a Ye Big show this fall in Bloomington. Robinson also performs with local free jazz group Disorganizer. You can discover more local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois and the GLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories, with help today from Charlie Schlenker, Mary Cullen, John Norton, and a blast from the past, Laura Kennedy. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. You can also check out Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet us your comments using the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News, and I'm at Ryan WGLT. Let's hear some more from Ye Big and Stephen Robinson. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.